Some volatility came back to the grain markets today, but wheat was an anchor on grains again. Livestock futures were firm, well, except for the back month hogs. Milk futures pushed up again, which means it's a great day to have a conversation on milk marketing and what's driving these cheese prices to record highs.
Live from the sunny Midwest via Farm Journal broadcast, this is AgriTalk. This afternoon, we chat with Mike North from Commodity Risk Management Group. And right after the news, make way for Bubba, Todd Bubba Horowitz from BubbaTrading.com. I'm handsome newsman Davis Michelson, and now the host of AgriTalk, Chip Lorre.
All right, Davis. Morning, hey, buddy. Man. How's things going this afternoon? Good?
Pretty good, pretty good. How do I sound? I feel like I'm a little bit echoey today.
You sound like you have a sunnier disposition.
I feel much, much sunnier. Part of it may be I've actually doubled the amount of windows in my broadcast laboratory.
Nice. Yeah, nice.
I've got two now.
On purpose?
I've got two. Yes. Yes.
Well, you know, a window's just a hole. So, I mean, there could have been an accident involved.
Oh, there were accidents, yes. But in this case, no. All that happened was I humped all my gear up out of the broadcast bunker downstairs.
Yeah.
I don't know what I'm going to do with that room now.
Oh,
maybe lay in some canned beans, I guess.
That's can do that. It sounds like a sound laboratory to me.
A sound laboratory. I like that. Yeah.
Yes. The old laboratory.
Possibilities are endless.
That's right. That's right. Yeah. Milk prices. I mentioned that they were higher. The June contract up 23 cents, 20.87. July contract up 42 cents all the way up to 1984. August up 28 cents, 1817. And September milk up a dime, 1746. These are some prices that I don't think most dairymen or producers expected that they would have at this time of the year. So now that they're here, what do you do about it? So that's the conversation that we're going to have with Mike North. And hey, when you look out at class three milk futures for September at $17.50, maybe that's not enough. Maybe Mike thinks that this market's going to continue to push to the upside and you just keep your, risk management in the cash market. We'll find out. We've got Mike coming up for two segments today. It's going to be a great conversation with him. It's always a great conversation with Mike.
So. For sure, for sure.
All right. What was moving prices around today, Davis?
Well, Chip, European wheat prices have been under pressure this week with improved rainfall across much of the wheat production area. Black Sea growing conditions have also improved. On the domestic side of the market, increased harvest activity this week is increasing hedge requirements, which has kept the market on the defensive. The persistent weight on wheat prices has forced a technical breakdown, with July SRW futures today posting the lowest close since September 10 of last year, Chip.
Yeah.
July hard red winter wheat 5¾ lower, 432.5. July soft red dropped 7¼ cents to 488¾. July spring wheat sprang 5¼ cents to close at 520¼, Chip.
Yeah, so if we've got that, SRW wheat at the lowest prices since early last fall, obviously it is an anchor on the rest of the market. Obviously we've done some technical damage to this market. We're not seeing any trigger in here right now. The funds are just getting more comfortable on the short side.
Ethanol production in the weekend of June 12 inched up an average of 4,000 barrels per day. Chip, that's up to 841,000 barrels per day, the seventh consecutive week of production gains. Ethanol stocks fell 456,000 barrels to 21.346 million barrels. That's the lowest since December and 267,000 below the year-ago storage level.
Wow.
There continues to be speculation that China could step into the U.S. ethanol market to help its efforts to honor the terms of the trade accord with the United States. July corn futures were a penny and a quarter higher, 330¼. September corn firmed 3/4 to 335. Dease corn closed at 342¾ steady on the day. This feels like good news for ethanol, and yet the corn market just kind of seemed to shrug it off.
Well, it was lower early in the day, and the fact that it came back closed higher in the nearbys with the bull spreads working, I'm gonna take it as a win for the corn market today.
Oh, all right.
Yeah, and Yeah, Lighthizer, U.S. Trade Rep Lighthizer, testifying today, basically said, listen, we need to give them a little bit of time. We need to have some flexibility on what the timeline looks like, but China's going to be there. China's going to live up to the terms of phase one.
We'll talk that Chinese crushers have been shopping for U.S. beans the past 2 days, helped to chase sellers out of the market after midday. Technically, July bean futures dropped to test support at 860 in early trade and recovered to push through resistance at yesterday's high before setting back to match the highest close of the month. Mm-hmm. Traders do not see an immediate threat from the weather, but longer-term forecasts are drying out and warming up, which also helped to support bean prices. July soybean futures 4.25 cents higher, 871.25. August soybeans up 3.75, 871.75. Novi beans closed at 876.5, up 3.5 today.
Yeah, and some areas are already hot and dry. We know that, but we're talking about taking those conditions across more of the bean crop in the Midwest.
All right. Well, let me grab a gear here, Chip. July cotton 127 higher, 61.34. Dease cotton up 92, 60 cents even. Livestock, August live cattle futures 7.5 cents higher, 96.85, and Dease cattle were steady at 103.87.5. August feeders up 70 cents, 133.57.5. And on the snout side, July lean hogs unchanged, 49.65. Dease hogs slipped 42.5 cents to 52.15. Chip.
All right. Thank you very much, Davis. Let's bring in Todd Horowitz, BubbaTrading.com. How you doing, Bubba?
What's up, Chip? Those mellow tones of Davis, man. He's very calm today. What's going on?
he's in his new environment. He's got two windows instead of one. It's a sunnier Davis disposition.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. I'm trying not to be too echoey, too. That's part of it.
What's up, Davis? How you doing, buddy?
Hey, hey. How you doing, Bubba?
Okay, Bubba, here's the deal. We've got wheat breaking down technically, and we've got soybeans that are trying to make a technical breakout to the upside. How do you mesh those two things?
Well, and corn's going to go up. How do you like that? As I said here a month ago, the lows are in. But I tell you what the interesting things that are going on right now, Chip. The funds are short up the kazoo, and they're trying to take advantage of this illiquid, quiet market. In the meantime, the commercials are buying and still buying, I think they're getting ready to load up and stick it right to the funds as usual. And I think that's around the corner. I think we need, these corn probably over let's say 345. If we get there, I think they take them off from there, and we get a nice rally and they force all those shorts to cover, which creates a nice little spike. And then maybe we can get the rally and keep it going. But I do think they're starting to look a lot better. The fact they've been able to hold on every sell off and not break down is good. Of course, as you said, wheat is breaking down. If it doesn't come back from here, it's going to be ugly. Okay, but I think that it probably will. And beans are on the cusp of trying to break out, and I think they will as well. I mean, I would not be surprised to see $9 beans, $3.80, $3.90 corn. We'll see. I mean, again, I'm looking for some pretty good upside in both the corn and beans. Wheat's still a real big question mark.
Okay, gotcha. Give me 15 seconds on what Powell has said this week.
Oh, yeah. I need about a year. He said nothing. He's continuing to try to manipulate the market. He's continuing to prove that the minute you move into the Fed chair, you become a clueless guy with no common sense. Because, again, they keep trying to manipulate this market and put so much money into it that it doesn't. Money does not create jobs. It does not sell more corn.
Okay. Exactly. Bubba, thanks, man. We got a hop. That is Todd Horowitz, BubbaTrading.com. We got Mike North coming up next. Everyone talks big yields, but Channel Seedsmen deliver advice that yields results. Every season, Channel Seedsmen match elite seed products with unmatched service and support to push the performance of every acre. That's why you can count on Channel for what you need to make the most of your season. You don't have to be a Channel customer to take advantage of this support. Visit channel.com/agritalk to sign up and receive expert advice that yields.
When news breaks, the newsmakers talk about it on AgriTalk with Chip Flory.
Hey, Davis, real quick.
Yes.
That reminded me. You said, when news breaks.
Mm-hmm.
There are rumors
in
the market late this afternoon of switches of Brazilian sales of beans to the U.S. Gulf for for origin.
Oh,
and talked that a few more cargoes of beans were sold to China today. Pro Farmer senior market analyst Jeff Wilson is chiming in on that. So, yeah, that's really we've said for a long time that as soon as it makes economic sense, financial sense for China to buy U.S. soybeans, that they would buy U.S. soybeans. Well, here we are. Here we are. Okay, let's bring in Mike North, Commodity Risk Management Group. How you doing, Mike?
Doing great. How's Chip?
Doing just fine, just fine. I know it's been a busy day, so let's take a moment here and get an update on what's going on in the Kansas wheat harvest from Dean from Minnesota. Dean, my brother, it's been a while. How are you?
Good. It's been about middle of March when the pandemic all starts the last time I talked to you, Chip, so it's been
a while. That's right. That's right. How things going? You out cutting wheat?
Yeah, I'm down here helping a friend of mine cut wheat, whatever, and it's great wheat, great test weight, but some good protein and some bad protein. So we've been the test weight is up into 65, 63, 64, 65. The highest one I've heard now is 67. So the quality is good, and it's very dry. I mean, it's very dry. I mean, there's been a few wheat fires and stuff like that, but other than that, things are going well. We're done. Most of it's done in Oklahoma, and we're moving into southern Kansas, and we're up by, a lot of it's getting ready up towards Bratt, Kansas now, and getting and stuff like that. So we haven't had no rain, and it's very dry. The beans and the feed that they plant for the cattle and livestock, it all needs a drink, and the ground is really hard. If you remember many few years ago when it was dry up in Minnesota, in there where we burn all the teeth off them, chisel plows and rippers, it's going to be like down here. You can't even put a spade in the ground. That's so hard, so and dry. So it's going right along there, Chip, and the yields are great, but you know what yields does, but you get in western Kansas, there ain't much planted out there because it was just wheat or wet out there, and they never got it in. And I mean, good as this crop is, it's really good for what it went through. I mean, it went through a wet fall trying to get it planted, and then it went through a freeze, and there ain't no effect on here. And the yield's about 70 bushels, and between 50 and 70 bushels.
Okay. All right, 50 to 70 bushels. All right. Where's your next move to, Dean?
Yeah, I am going to come back home and spray some beans. I just come down here for a couple of weeks. They have a friend of mine, and then I'm going later on, I'm going to go to South Dakota, help a friend of mine out there for a little bit out in South Dakota. So that won't be till probably middle of July or whatever. But that's what my plan is and stuff like that. So I just thought, you know what, I was sitting here and waiting on trucks. I thought I'd give you a quick call and an update. Perfect. I don't remember anybody give you that, but you got one now.
Perfect. Perfect. Thanks, man. Give us a call when you get into South Dakota.
I will do that, Chip. You guys, everybody be safe. Talk to you later.
Excellent. Bye-bye. You be safe as well. That is Dean from Minnesota. There you go, Mike. Got a harvest report on the ground. 50 to 70 bushel. Some variability in the protein, but dry, dry, dry. It seems like that's kind of getting into these markets a little bit, isn't it?
It is. And, you know, that's a sentiment that we were picking up out of Oklahoma. Lots of those same stories. Pretty good yields, but proteins can be hit and miss.
Right, right. Okay. Let's get into what's going on in this milk trade, Mike. Some opportunities that we didn't think was going to be around. What is behind this push to record cheese prices?
Well, it's the culmination of strong retail demand, a reopening of restaurants, and food service coolers getting restocked. And then in addition to that, of course, the big ad of the U.S. government offering contracts out for the farm-to-family food box program, and all of these new buyers chasing after cheese. So cheese prices have exploded. We've gone to record highs. Last week, we set a new high on block cheese of $2.58 and change. Unprecedented prices. All month long so far, we've traded $2.50 to $2.55, essentially. And we are looking at, as a consequence, a big, big run in milk price. Because if you remember, in milk, it's priced based on what the basket of products are priced at.
Right.
And so with a high cheese price, we've watched that class three milk market run right alongside of it. And now that we're into the averaging period for that July milk price, it has to play catch up to cheese. So you've watched the July price alone this week gain more than a dollar.
Okay. So I understand the components that I want to get back to butter here in just a second. I want to get an update on what's happening there. But first, when we see a move like this in the futures market for class three milk, does that translate into strength in the cash market too?
It does. Ultimately, because of that averaging, that period, that pricing process that we go through with product always leads milk. But as you watch the CME, it's trying to keep up with what product is doing, which then necessarily, you know, becomes a price point in the cash market as well. Just as a look inside the box, a lot of people that make cheese will take what the CME does in a day, add a margin to it, and that's how they'll price it to their customer.
Gotcha. Okay. All right. Very good. So back to the components. The butter market had been so supportive through a lot of 2019, and it was expected to help support into 2020. And then, of course, the demand destruction comes in with the restaurant demand gone and the food service demand gone. What's the situation on butter prices?
So butter has actually been in a bit of a decline through, you know, all of the second half of last year, and then it just hit the cliff, like you say, when the food service community shut down. And since that time, after making its lows in late April, the market has rebounded and gone back to pre-COVID levels. Now, at $1.80 spot today, we are not back to the 240 prices that we saw in summer of last year, but we are well off of those lows, you know, that we established at $1.10 just, you know, a month and a half ago. So we've seen a little recovery there. The world market remains a bit soft on butter, though. In the global dairy trade auction yesterday, butter was one of few products that actually moved lower. And so as we look at the world market, we are kind of right in the hunt. And I would suspect that as we go forward, these levels of butter will likely carry for a little bit.
This seems like a healthy price for butter when you're talking about this, because if we were up there around that 240 level, you'd be taking a bite out of demand, wouldn't you?
You know, that's exactly what started to happen last year. We started to supply that space well enough. We were growing inventories at a rate where the price just had to adjust. And there, too, we were way over the world market. So we were coming back to world prices. And then, of course, you know, everything in the last 60 days that has happened unfolded. And now we're trying to go back towards, you know, being competitive in the world space. So you're right. I mean, we're in a spot where we can compete there. It'll be unlikely for us to go back and touch that 240 number anytime quick.
Okay. So the record cheese prices, what has that done to demand?
So we are now getting feedback from some of our clients that their customers are pushing back on price. We've definitely seen a big run in price, and in some cases it's somewhat inelastic. If you're a pizza shop and you're reopening to serve your client, you aren't going to go without cheese. You're going to buy cheese. But after you get enough of it, you're going to say, hey, wait a second, I'm not buying $3 cheese anymore, which is what these guys are paying, or north of that, above and beyond these wholesale prices we talk about at $2.50, they're pushing back. They're coming back and saying, hey, we got enough for right now. We're not going to be bidding this thing up anymore. And so we have relaxed prices. Like I say, we're trading 2.5 right now. We're about 8 cents off the high. And I would suspect there could be more of that as we go forward in time, given what we're getting in terms of feedback through our clients. So record prices, as we see in every market, only stay there for a short time, right, Chip?
Yep.
It's the old expression that the cure for high prices is high prices. And this you know, this culmination of all of these different sectors, retail, food service, and government contracts coming together to bid it where it's at, you know, there are weak links in that chain. And as we start to see high prices, there's natural pushback along every demand curve that we would expect. And we're seeing it play out in cheese.
Excellent. Excellent. Okay, Mike, we're almost to the end of this segment here. I cannot believe that how fast it goes. When we come back, I want to start with an evaluation of where we are in the restocking process, because I think that tells us how much longer the demand is going to stick around to help support milk prices. Then, I mean, what do we do with $19, $20 milk? What's the next step there? We've got to talk our risk management strategies. It's Conversation Today with Mike North from Commodity Risk Management Group right here on AgriTalk. It's time for headline news featuring some of the headlines ripped from Pro Farmers First Thing today. Inexpensive and readily available steroid is reducing the risk of COVID-19 deaths. Still, Dr. Fauci calls for action to prevent a coronavirus surge. Beijing has ordered all schools to close as it struggles to halt a new coronavirus outbreak. Spring dryness clips the German wheat crop. Ukraine announced it will no longer publish grain export data for the remainder of the 2019-20 marketing year. You can do that? I had no idea. Wheeler says recent applications for retroactive or gap SREs must be treated like other exemption requests. That's not good news for ethanol. And finally, Chinese hog production climbing as new facilities start production. Check out all the Pro Farmer has to offer by going to tryprofarmer.com.
Opinions expressed on AgriTalk do not necessarily reflect the views of Farm Journal Broadcasting, affiliate stations, or sponsors. AgriTalk is brought to you by America's Conservation Ag Movement, a national partnership to help farmers scale conservation for their businesses, the environment, and their communities. To learn more, visit agweb.com/ACAM.
Yeah, it's not Tuesday, but we still get some Joe Baklavic.
We sure do.
Blue grease hog. The fish hole. All right, welcome back to AgriTalk. Before we get back to the conversation with Mike North, let's go ahead and recap how the markets closed.
Well, chip July hard red winter wheat 5¾ cents lower today at 432.5. July soft red dropped 7¼ cents to 488¾. July corn futures were a penny and a quarter higher at 330¼. Dece corn closed at 342¾, steady today. July soybean futures 4¼ cents higher, 871¼. November soybeans closed at 876.5, up 3.5 cents today. July cotton 127 higher, 61.34. And on the livestock side, August live cattle futures 7½ cents higher, 96.85. August feeders jumped 70 cents to 133.57.5. And July lean hogs unchanged, 49.65. There's your quick market recap. Back to you, Chip.
Yeah, that move in cotton.
$1.27
again,
higher.
Going back to the note from Jeff Wilson, trade rep Lighthizer today came out and said China will live up to its phase one deal despite the pandemic, and it is now economic for them to do so. They're going to buy some cotton, too. I got to believe that. I got to believe that they'll be in there for that. All right, thanks, Davis. Let's get back to the conversation with Mike North, Commodity Risk Management Group. So the restocking process. Mike, cottage cheese is one of those items that's on my shopping list every week. Every week. There for a while.
Mine both.
There for a while, it was hard to get the old large curd 4% because it wasn't all that available. It feels like the supply of that product is more consistent now. Supply of sour cream more consistent. That dairy case seems to be more consistently supplied. But as we're restocking for restaurant and food service, where are we in that process?
You know, product by product, Chip, it's a little bit different. I will tell you that we are, if we're not already there, we're very close on cheese.
Okay.
We're getting close on butter. As it relates to some of the other products, a little bit outside of those mainline categories, it's a little bit hit and miss. If you look at cream multiples, which basically cream in the open market sells as a multiple of the butter price, and as we talk about this time of the year, we're making ice cream, we're doing all these other things. Cream has gotten really, really tight as restaurants are trying to pick up on some of that side, as ice cream makers are competing in that space. So that has also been a feature that has yet to really slow down, but we're starting to feel a little bit of weakness coming on the cream side of things too. So I think we're very, very close, Chip.
Okay.
The interesting thing is, as we try to translate that message back to the farmer, yeah, the reality of the current product situation is that we've raced out in front of milk prices, and the milk prices, I'm talking futures now, have been what I'll call non-believers. And in the end, they have not kept up with where these products are. So you see the June price just shy of $21, right? It's legitimately there because it's relying on real-time product data to tell you what the price should be. Okay. The July market, though, is a dollar discount to June. But because the averaging period for June Class 3 began with cheese at $1.80 and ended with cheese at $2.50, it will be at a discount ultimately to where the July Class 3 should be, because we're starting the July averaging period with cheese at $2.50. So one of two things has to be true to keep July milk at $19.84, which, by the way, is only a penny off of the high that was met today and set last week. Yeah. Reality is, we either need cheese prices to drop for the next 4 weeks, or we need the July milk price to come up to meet cheese where it's at. I think there's maybe a little bit of both in play as we see this restocking come to conclusion. We're seeing the opportunity for July milk to maybe go up another dollar or two.
Okay.
And so there's opportunity in this month to see it keep going higher. But then the question becomes, if cheese keeps falling from here, what happens in the months that follow? And so as we talk about the different tools out there, we have, really been actively going after things with options. You know, let's face it, it's an election year. We've just come through the craziest economic environment of our lifetime. We're not big advocates of selling futures in here, but option strategies, and that includes this dairy revenue protection program that you and I have talked about very specifically in the past. We're moving a lot of those endorsements. We're doing a lot of option strategies. We're trying to underpin this market as these opportunities show up, and I think that's the way to go about it. Because let's face it, the math doesn't line up. There's opportunity still in front of us, but we see the risk as some of this restocking comes to fruition, as the retail demand gets everything that they need. And then perhaps when the government bid ends, that's the question mark nobody really can answer right now. That's the thing that hangs out there. Will we see round two of the food box program? There was even chatter today about, some extensions there. What's that going to look like this year? If they pull out, which there's been some, retraction on their Section 32 purchases, which, was built into the Farm Bill. Basically, if they start pulling away because, quote unquote, they've done their job, that could really send milk prices lower very quickly. So lots of stuff to consider there.
Okay. Correct me if I'm wrong, but what you're looking to do is to put some downside price risk or protection in place, but you're trying to leave the upside potential open as well, correct? So do it with a known price. Correct. You're either talking about using a put option or your margin coverage.
Dairy revenue protection. Yep.
Dairy revenue protection. Yes. Sorry. Jeez.
Yep.
I got to remember that.
Yep, you got it. Well, there's also DMC, which is the old margin protection program. So you're not out of line to say that, but you had to already be signed up for that.
Gotcha. Very good. Very good. Did we miss anything on dairy, Mike?
I think you've hit it pretty well. I mean, the real simple message here is, hey, we just swung this thing 180, took it back to record levels. We've got great prices we never would have expected 45 days ago. The ball is in the producer's court, and the question they have to ask themselves is, what am I going to do about this now? Because a lot of people walked past the opportunity we had in February.
Right. Exactly. Okay. Man, what are you making of this corn market? It feels, you know, we ran right up there to that 334.5 earlier this week, and then the fund stepped back in and decided to protect their short position, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think until we get through that June 30 report, nobody's going to pour any coals on a fire that takes us higher or lower. To me, it feels like a market that's a little bit range bound. I mean, we have continued to kind of run the course of an upward trend, though incredibly quietly. You know, we kind of almost threatened it here a little bit today, busting through that trend line and then recovering at the end. But to me, I don't think this is going to be a real big action type of marketplace unless they do something extreme coming in through that June 30 report. We got to strip some supply out of this conversation because we obviously know what demand has done to the price. So I think at this stage in the game, we've got to turn this thing back to a supply conversation, and the way to kick this off at the end of the month would be strip some acres out of there. If they don't, I don't know what kind of story you're going to come up with to really jack this thing up.
What are the odds that they're going to do that, Mike?
Well, I think those last acres probably didn't get planted just because, hey, it's June. The prices are really low. I'm not making any money. Do I really want to fight to try to get that stuff in the ground? So I think there's room, you know, if you do the math, you know, the last plantings report had us at 97%. You run that against the 97 million acres, you got about a 3 million acre deficit that wasn't planted. Maybe an extra million got in because guys wanted to get some silage in the ground or whatever. I think you legitimately could strip a couple million away that way. Then it becomes a question of what actually happened between corn and soybeans this spring. Were there guys that actively, economically switching, you know, were they switching from corn to beans? Right. That's the hard one I can't answer. I heard of it. I definitely had clients telling me that they themselves were making some of those changes. And so I got to believe there's some of that there too. Because did you buy the planting intentions number when it was released at the end of March?
Not really.
It was kind of a tough sell for me. I really had a hard time stretching my head around 97. So I think they could pull it away in these times especially, and with that last little bit of planting that just was a little bit, you know, more difficult to get done. And if, you know, if we took 4 million acres out, that'd be nice. That takes away 660 million bushels. That starts, you know, bringing you back into that 2.7 camp, provided they don't make some more additions to to ethanol or otherwise. Right. But we'll see. I mean, you're going to have to do some big work on the supply side, I think.
Absolutely. Mike, it's always fun to talk with you, man. Thank you so much for making time for us.
Hey, my pleasure. My pleasure.
Excellent. All right, that is Mike North, Commodity Risk Management Group. When we come back, Davis and I are going to put a wrap on that, and I'm going to pull some of the highlights from that conversation with Mike. That's next on AgriTalk.
I don't know what you're thinking, so call us at 855-4-TALK-AG and tell us what's on your mind.
All right, we've actually got time. If you do want to pick up the phone, give us a call, 855-482-5524. We've got time to take a call. You can also tweet at us, hashtag AgriTalk, just to make sure that I see it. All right, really good conversation. First off, I know I'm going to forget to do this if I wait until the end of the show. Dean, thanks for calling in. Appreciate that.
Always great to hear from Dean.
Yep, and getting on the ground update from what's going on. during wheat harvest. That's always good stuff from Dean. Now, a couple of the highlights from Mike North. Sometimes I scramble when somebody like Mike is on, where I know that he's going to be going through so much information in helping to explain why milk prices have done what they have done. And then I know that he's going to get to the strategy. Sometimes I scramble to get out of the way so that Mike can continue talking. And when I was summarizing what he was talking about on his pricing strategies, his risk management strategy, I feel like I kind of stepped on my tongue there a couple of times. Put options or the dairy revenue protection program. It's stuff that, A, you know what the cost is, you know what the protection is going to cost you, and B, it covers most of the downside risk while leaving upside potential in place. And the reason that he's looking to do that is because milk has underperformed against the product prices over the last month. So, like he said, the easy way to fix that is for milk prices to go up while product prices come down. But what if the product prices don't? Okay? If they don't, then we're going to have to see this milk price continue to go to the upside.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's very fascinating to me the way that this all works.
He was talking about $1 to $2 higher, I think, in the July he was talking about it, if I remember correctly.
Yeah, which would put you into that $21.50, $22 area, which is crazy.
Yeah. Yeah, and that felt to me like that was in a scenario where cheese was actually softening to meet up with it. So if we don't get the softer cheese price, does milk have the juice to get that high?
Right. Yes, it does, because of the averaging and the way that it worked, the way that it all builds that milk price. So yeah, it would help to support the milk prices. That food box program, boy, remember.
Yeah, what do you make of that?
It's a very good program. The biggest issues that I've got with the food box program, and some people will disagree with me on this. I don't particularly like saying to a consumer, here's your food box and this is what's in it, and that's what you're going to get regardless of what you would rather have. Okay. I'm not really into dictating a consumer's choice when it comes to what they want to eat. I understand that that leaves the door open for bad decisions. I get that. That's the way it is. I would rather give the consumers their choice. But when you're talking about buying as much dairy product and cheese in particular as we are to put into that food box program, Davis, it's having an impact. There is no question about it. If they would have done that to pork and to beef when we were even if they would do it right now with some of the slaughterhouse issues that we continue to have, we wouldn't have been able to supply it. That was definitely a be careful what you ask for scenario there. But it's helping the produce market. It's helping the dairy market. And in some ways, it will eventually help that beef market and the pork market as well. I was quick to answer when Mike said, when Mike asked the question, did you believe that number back at the end of March on the corn plantings, 97 million. Mm-hmm. I was quick to say no. The reason for that isn't because I don't necessarily not believe the 97 million acres of corn, or I don't necessarily not believe the 83.5 million acres of soybeans. It's that I don't believe the combined total of 180.5. I want to be closer to a 178.5, 179. So take it. I feel like somehow, some way, just based on sucky financing or economic conditions out there, we got to take some acres out. And I've noticed some acres that have gone. I watched the whole process on some of these acres in the hills of Northeast Iowa that when corn prices were running up, pasture ground came out of pasture and went into row crop production. It's now starting to find its way back to pasture. I'm not saying that it's a huge number of acres, but if it's happening on an 80-mile drive that I make every as many weekends as I can, then it's happening in other places too. So
that's going to be a lot of fence to put back into if we're going to put it back to pasture and run something out there.
Yeah. There is that problem. But in many cases, the fence never came out. Okay. You know, does it need some TLC? Yeah. But the fence is still there. But, you know, if the cows are nice enough, they'll respect it, right?
Oh, I'm sure if they're nice enough. You want to get nice cows.
Nice cows.
No one likes ill-tempered cattle.
That's why those high-headed heifers go straight on the truck.
We'll show you, Bessie.
National Weather Service, 6-10 day, June 23rd through the 27th. Below normal temperatures over most of the Corn Belt. Above normal precipitation over most of the Corn Belt. The exception on the precip, the Dakotas and Minnesota, where below normal precipitation is expected. It feels like there's some sort of a battleground being drawn between the different models out there right now. 8 to 14 day, we start to push those below normal temperatures off to the south and the east. We've got above normal temperatures expected June 25th through July 1. Jeez, July 1. Above normal temperatures over the western Corn Belt and the northern production areas. Normal to below normal temperatures in the eastern belt. Above normal precipitation in the eastern belt. Normal to below normal in the west. Wow.
That was a mouthful.
Okay. Well, that was. Hey, for Davis and for producer Joe Stackler, thank you for listening. Tomorrow morning, USDA Chief Economist Robert Johansson and USDA Undersecretary Bill Northey.